memory. This is the 19th of July, 1991, at a home called Greystone in Taconic. Marion Haberle and Paul Revillard are interviewing Peter Wick, who has lived here for a long, long time. Peter, we would like to start today with the beginnings of your father and mother. Can you tell us, please, of their past, where they were born, and so forth?
My father was born in Norway, north of the Arctic Circle. And he was, he lived on his farm and had quite a few brothers and sisters, and times were very hard up there because there was not much to do. You could either farm or go fishing. And so he, what happened was the oldest boy, he would get the farm, but then the rest of the people had a shift for themselves. So my dad didn't think much of fishing, so he went on a sailing ship, and he sailed the world for several years. And he became an able seaman, which was quite a distinction in those days, because he had to understand so many skills, be able to climb up the masts and furl sails, and he became a sailmaker. My mother was born in the southern part of Norway, right near the old city of Tønsberg, which is an old Viking port. And she also lived on a farm, and they also were very poor. So around 1905, she came to this country as a young girl. She came with her cousin. And she got a job in working for wealthy people, working as a household person. And they, Norwegians were, and Swedes, and Scandinavians rather, were preferred because they had such, they were very good at their jobs, and they somehow they seemed to be preferred because of their industriousness and what have you. And so my mother got a job working for a very wealthy family. My dad, prior to meeting my mother, got off the ship, went on the ship one time in Baltimore, and worked on a pilot boat. A pilot boat is a boat that takes the big ships in. And then he moved up to New York and he got a job. He also worked for a wealthy person. He had a big yacht, and my father was very handy person, and he learned all the he became an engineer on the yacht, and he was very well thought of, and then he met my mother in New York and they got married. And they worked for wealthy people for quite a number of years. And 1926, he quit his job and bought a gas station in Staten Island in New York. He worked very hard at it. And one of his former employees wanted him to come back to work for them, and they offered him a good job. So he decided to quit the gas station and he went to work for them. Their names were C.F. Rogers. They built a big mansion in top of Smith Hill.
Four Winds.
Four Winds, it was called. I think it was about 2,000 acres of land. But these people, they never stayed very long. They hardly ever lived in any place more than 2-3 weeks at a time. They just simply had so much money, they lived all over. They could travel. And so my dad was up here, and they decided, they got unhappy with each other and got a divorce. So there was my dad out of a job. And then Mr. Harris bought the place, and he worked for him for 2 years. And then the Depression came, and my dad was laid off. So he was absolutely nothing he could do. He didn't know what he could do, because those kind of jobs were long gone by. So one day we were riding around here in Taconic, and my mother saw a sign on this place that we're sitting in here now. for sales sign, and she says that, Peter, she says, stop the car. And he said, well, what do you want to do? Look at that barn. And she looked down it, she says, we're going to buy the place. Good. She's the one that carried the ball from here on. And they moved in, and that first winter was kind of hard. We didn't have anything. Everything we had went into this place. And there were no plumbing. There was an outside toilet. There was you had to go down in the field for the water for a well, and it was kind of hard. And the first day we lived on, she had to cook on an open fireplace back there. And of course, my brother and I, we thought this was great. We felt like Robinson Crusoe. We were so happy here. And so finally, little by little, my dad cleared down at the lake, and he bought some boats, and he spread it out, fishing boats, and then he built some cabins. And the first thing you know, they were doing very well. My mother took in boarders here. She took people in from all over the country. And she did fine. And people were crazy about her. They kept coming back and coming back because she was a dynamic person and made people feel good. And so we had the best years of our life here.
I'd like to interject at this point, Peter. Your father's name was Peter Christian Wick. Your mother's name was Ronhild, Raghnhild. And I would just like to say at this point that she was the most open and loving woman I think I've ever known. And she was so outgoing, and her laughter rang all over the place. And you could hear her laugh, and it was infectious. She was a delightful woman and a delightful hostess. Would you go on from there, Peter, to your childhood here, schooling and so forth?
Well, my brother decided he wanted to go to Hotchkiss School, and the Hotchkiss School would take residence people here if you passed the test. So my brother decided to go down and take the test, and of course I had to drive him down. So I parked outside of Bissell Hall, and he went in and took the test. And as I was sitting out there, I said, well, I might as well go in too. So I went in and I passed the test, and my brother didn't pass. And I didn't want to go there. I didn't have any use. And it was a great place to go, but at that time, I couldn't see myself going to a place like that. So, but I never let my brother forget that. You see, that was a feather in my hat. It just came to me, you know, accidentally, you see. Well, anyway, he went there for 4 years, and I only went there for a year. That was a year when they had infantile paralysis. We got quarantined in our home, and they sent my lessons. I had to do my lessons at home, you see. And I was in love at the time, and I didn't want to, and I never did them. And so I didn't. It's a very difficult school, so much to my relief, I was told not to come back. But my brother went there, and then I went to the high school. The high school was in Lakeville at the time. That was a brand new school. I always remember going there. And after having gone to Hotchkiss, it was a breeze down there. I didn't have to do any homework at all. For that 1 year that I had there, it really jumped me way ahead. And I think probably those were the best years of my life. I was on a basketball team, and then they had the skiing down here in Salisbury. That was a big thing in those days. And the Satra brothers, who were world-renowned skiers, were taking prizes all over the United States. And I fell in love with one of their sisters. And I was sitting on top of the world till I graduated out of high school.
Can I interrupt you a minute? For your elementary school, did you attend this little...
No, I didn't. No,
I didn't. School down here?
We came here when I came here. I started high school.
Oh,
but
I see.
My mother had one of the teachers stayed here. She boarded here. I think she probably made about $1,000 a year, you know.
Yes.
And she was from Sharon. Do you remember who that was?
I don't remember the name.
It wasn't Carberry, was it?
I don't know, Peter.
But anyways, I always remember she had this room up here. It was quite a unique little town in those days.
And Walter went on from Hotchkiss. Where did Walter go?
Well, He went to New Britain. Called Normal School.
New Britain Normal School.
Yeah, TCC they used to call it. Britain, I don't know what they call it.
Yes.
Then the war came along. Of course, that everything ended for us. And that was the end for us, you know. I mean, the war changed everything.
Oh.
It just really changed everything, and we both got into the Army. And he became an officer because he had good education, and I remained in the ranks. But I really had a wonderful experience in the war, during the war. I got in the 10th Mountain Division, which is, they call them skeet troops, but that was just a sort of a euphemism, because it was just a plain old army, actually. But we were in very interesting places. I was up in Canada, ice climbing and rock climbing and skiing. It was just like a big country club for me for a while, until we made the first invasion.
The Italy sector?
No, this was up in Kiska, up in the Aleutian Islands. We landed on the island of Kiska up there.
Oh.
And it's really a lot too. I can't just tell you everything we did, but we came back and then they formed a division, and then we went to Europe.
Oh.
And we landed in Naples and fought all the way up to the Austrian border. So then I came back, and my folks are still living here, but I never came back here. I got married, and so some time has passed, and now I come up here every weekend since my parents have passed away.
Peter, tell us something about the parties and the people that came to parties here in this house.
Well, my mother was more than just an innkeeper. She was a very social person. It's hard for me to explain, but everybody had such good times, and I don't know how I can explain it, Paul.
Well, you might explain it this way. My wife and I drove up from Florida to this particular house to make a New Year's party here. it had that allure for everyone in the area. It wasn't just New Year's, but Ron Hill and Peter threw parties at the drop of a hat. Everyone was welcome.
Hospitality was what she lived for. She liked to be. That's all she lived for. She was queen in the kitchen, and she loved everything she did, and she was a great magnetism. I didn't realize it at the time because I was her son, and I couldn't care less about that, but after years had gone by, I began to appreciate how people took to her, you know. And we even had people that went to Norway to see her family. And things like that. Families would go over and call on her. And, you know, that was, I thought that was an unusual thing to happen. That they interested in her to find out where she came from and who her people were. And of course, those people over there received these people with open arms, and it was quite a interesting phenomenon, I think.
Peter, I recall very vividly you playing the accordion and Walter joining in, singing. How did you begin your music? What started you on music and the accordion?
Well, when I was a little kid, when we lived on Staten Island, my mother thought she'd like to send me she started us with violin lessons. And of course, to be a young boy with a violin, that was sort of a sissy thing. And she started with my brother, and I was hearing him practice, so I decided, well, I'd like to try it too. So we took 25 lessons, I remember, and After the 25th lesson, we got the violin free, so you can imagine what kind of a violin it was. But then, that was the end of my music at the time. But my mother wanted me to play. Of course, the accordion was a great European instrument. That was people played that for dances, you know. And my mother bought me a little German accordion, a push-pull kind. You had one note in and a different note out. And I learned how to play that. And I learned all, she used to sing when she washed her clothes and dishes, so I learned all the Norwegian music by listening to her sing these songs. And then when I went up to Hotchkiss, there was a lot of kids up there with a lot of money and no brains, I guess. But anyway, I bought a piano accordion from a bar for 25 cents, brand new one. He said he needed some money to go and buy ice cream down on Lake Road. So it was a nice little accordion. That's how I learned. I had to learn all over again because the piano accordion is, you know, it's. And I didn't take any lessons, but I bought phonograph records and I'd play the phonograph, you know, I mean, just by listening. And then when we played up at Erickson's Barn in Salisbury, those were times when all the Scandinavians in the area would go up there and they had dances and we'd have the most wonderful times up there.
Where was this?
Up at Erickson's Barn up,
oh.
Up on,
yeah.
You know
on Erickson's. Wonder Mountain Road?
No,
Selick Hill, up Selick Hill, off to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And the Erickson's had a farm up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go up there in their house and then he fixed the barn. And we had maybe 100 people of Norwegian, Scandinavian descent who were into skiing and they lived around here. And we used to have these dances and that's where I learned all these Norwegian songs. Mm-hmm. And so when the war came, I was playing all during the war in the army and I was, you know, I'm not a musician, but I could play well enough to entertain people.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how that happened. That's how I learned. That's where I got my. And now I'm taking piano lessons, and I play in a string quartet. From having picked up from those 25 lessons, and I can play the violin pretty good now.
Peter, would you tell us something of your family? You married your wife, lovely Betty. Tell us something of your family.
Oh, my family.
Sure.
Oh, I married Betty. Betty and I went to school together, but I wasn't, you know, I was going with somebody else then. So that was a Norwegian girl, Ingrid. And she turned around and got married.
Ingrid Saitri.
And me, so then I had nobody. But I had known Betty and kind of attracted to her. And after the war, I went out to California where she worked in the laboratory out there. And we got married. And we have six, how many kids have we got?
Four. I think you have about five.
No, I got five children, four boys and a girl.
And their names are?
Their names are, or the oldest one is Peter, then there's John, and Robert, and Walter, and Jennifer. And they're all doing very well. Peter works for the post office, he's into electronics, postal equipment, and John is a career counselor at the Matatuck College in Waterbury, and Robert is he's a plant pathologist at the University of Massachusetts. He's got his PhD, and Walter is a very successful photographer in New York City, and Jennifer is a travel agent. She worked for the American Express. They're all doing well. We don't even have to worry about them.
Good.
Very remarkable, but we really have been very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I've been so fortunate and had such a good time all my life.
Peter, mm-hmm. At some of the parties and get-togethers, you and Walter used to combine. I'd like to put you on the spot. Do you remember playing Ivan Skavinsky's Skavar?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that at all?
Do I remember Ivan Skavinsky's Skavar? Now the heroes were plenty and well known to fame in the troops that were led by the Tsar. But the bravest of these was a man by the name of Ivan Skibinski-Skibar. One day this bold Russian, he shouldered his gun and donned his most truculent sneer. Downtown he would go, where he trod on the toe of Abdul-Abul-Vladimir. Young man, quoth Abdul, has life grown so dull that you wish to end your career? Vile infidel, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdul-Abul-Vladimir. Well, it's about 10 more verses, I don't remember them all.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, beautiful.
That's a treasure.
That's a treasure.
Well, you always used to pick up these songs. This is a music house. That there, it's a kitchen now, but that was our music room. And we sang all the time as a family, you know.
That's wonderful.
And I can't get my family to sing a note. They say, oh, they don't bother with that. That was my mother that gave
us
that.
Well, you have the marvelous talent, though, Peter. You not only play the accordion, you play the violin, you play the piano. Most of all, you seem to enjoy it so much.
I do. I love it. I wish I'd been a musician.
Yes,
I love music.
You are a musician, mm-hmm. Peter. You're a musician at heart.
Mm-hmm. I play my piano. My piano teacher, she's a very good pianist, and I just look forward to going out and taking lessons from her. So she has a friend, she's 80 years old, she plays the violin. She used to play in a symphony orchestra. But she's very good. And they let me play with them. So can you imagine how much joy that is?
I can imagine.
So much fun to play.
Yeah.
We play all Bach and Mozart and all those things. I tell you, I'm so happy with myself.
You've probably inherited your mother's joy of living.
It's strange. When I went to Norway 10 years ago, they didn't seem to be musically inclined. Norway is a different place. Norway is a place is different. The people in Norway are sort of, when I say middle class, don't mean that they're lesser of a people, but they're hardworking people, and they have a sort of a same kind of a homogenization of the people, because Norway has been out of the European track, more or less. It's kind of grew by itself. I don't know if that's an accurate description, but it is different than most other countries. Mm-hmm. Last year, Betty and I went to Italy. We go every 3 years and go over just to, with my former comrades that fought in the war over there. And we go to the same places because I find the Italians are so, well, they remember us because we fought over there, and our foxholes and stuff are still there, so it's quite interesting for us to go.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of men over in Italy, in the northern part.
Mm-hmm.
So, Peter, your life here at Taconic, can you tell us something about the friends that you made in the Taconic area?
Well, all my dear friends I met here. Well, you're one of them, and Harold Jones, and the people I went to school with, you're very close, I think.
Most of them are still here or gone?
No, most of them are gone. I mean, as a matter of fact, I just know, there's not any people I know here in Taconic anymore. It's all, nobody can afford to live here, I guess. I don't know, it's strange because when we were here, they were all little farms, like up here, Elsa's Kitchen, that was John O'Hara, had a farm. They had little farms, you know, a couple of cows and horses. Do you remember that?
Oh, I certainly do.
And it was rural. This is a dirt road out here. And I remember when my mother, she was dismayed because when the cars came down, big clouds of dust would come in the house. Mm-hmm. And I can see her now with a broom, with a flour bag, and sweeping the walls. And I'd say, gee, the dust is going right back up, Mom. And she used to be frantic, you know, because she's a very clean person. Yeah. I remember that, you know, we washed the windows with newspapers and vinegar. Did you ever wash
windows? Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. My mother used to say that the black print seemed to make the windows shine. Now, I don't know mm-hmm. if it was true or not.
I think people still do that.
I think
yes.
they do.
Yes.
I wouldn't
yes.
be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were there many big estates here at that time?
My father worked for a big, tremendous estate. It was Four Winds Farm.
Peter, do you remember?
They had the Scovilles down here.
Yeah.
They were an old family.
Do you remember working on the Scoville estate, the Scoville garden? Do you remember Walter Angus at all?
Do I remember Walter Angus? I sure do.
Would you tell us something of your memories of working in the garden?
I was a young kid, you know, and I used to like to work up there. I was afraid of Walter Angus because he was a curmudgeon. And he had bad arthritis, and I think he was in pain a lot, and I think that's what made him so fierce. But I never forget one day, they had a berry patch right outside of his house. And I didn't know it, but Bill Reed and Harold Jones and Emmett, we all went out to pick berries. And I didn't realize that they knew how to pick the berries. They went and picked them fast. And then I was stuck with, you know, picking the berries that were left. It took me a long time to fill the baskets. So Mr. Angus was looking at the window, out the window. And he came out and he said, he had a very Scotch accent. I wish I could say how he said it. He says, "You don't seem to be picking as many berries as the other fellows, Peter." And I said, "Well, I can." I said, "They picked them all up before." And then he sort of criticized me. And I got mad and I had a whole tray of them. I threw them up in the air and I quit the job. I walked home. I was all upset. So my mother, she said, she knew something was wrong. I said, "Well," I told her what happened. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Mr. Angus called up, and he wanted to speak to me. And I told my mother, "I don't want to speak to him." But he hired me back anyway. But I always remember that that incident. One of my early lessons on how to pick berries.
And he didn't like the idea of one of your picking berries if you ate one once.
And then, you know, they had a couple of horses down there. I love the horses. But they had worked in the mines, and I think one of them was blind. And it was a big, long, scrawny horse, and the other one was a little short one. They weren't matched at all. So when they worked together, they had a hell of a time trying to, you know, remember those two horses?
Oh, I certainly do.
So one day we were cultivating cabbage.
Harry Jones was probably.
And the cultivator, the horse threw the cultivator. And I remember I got that white horse, and he stepped on every damn cabbage head. And Mr. Angus came out and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm picking some cabbage from the house." I'll never forget that horse. He seemed to do it on purpose, but he was blind, you see. But his legs were kind of funny, and he stuck out. I always remember that. And I worked with Paul's father. He was about, how old was Peter? 70 years old?
Well, he probably was 70 at the time. I would
work with him out there, and we used to hold potatoes. They had a big potato field. I don't know why they grew potatoes. But anyway, they grew them, and we had a home. And Ernie, that was Paul's father's name, he and I were like peas in a pod. Because I was young, and I knew I was strong. He was an old man, and he could out-hole me. He didn't seem to work at all, and he went down the row, and I was going like crazy, and I couldn't keep up. And he would just laugh, and they just knew how to do it. He told me that he lived in France, and he remembered pulling German soldiers off the field outside his house. It was a Franco-Prussian war. He told me that he was a little kid and he remembered them pulling the dead off the
field. He was 12.
And I was so impressed. And he said, yes. Franco, and then I realized, Franco, I said, well, when were you born? And I, you know, in those days, I thought that was so long ago. And I was so, so surprised to see a man that had done something like that. It made a big impression on me.
Yes, it did.
So.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another thing. These little things I remember. The Skulls, Herb Skulls, had a big long driveway. And they had, I think they were alder trees, weren't they?
They were plane trees, I think.
They were box trees. I don't know. They were beautiful trees in the line, about 12 or 15 on each side. So I would try to make points. So I used to have to do the trimming. And I would trim those trees as fast as I could to make points with Mr. Andrews, I guess. And what's his name?
Gottlieb?
Bill.
Oh, Bill. Bill Reed.
Bill Reed is another man I adore. He came up to me, he said, what are you trying to do, get us all fired? And I said, I laughed, I said, yeah, I'd like to get you all fired. And Bill Reed, he was another one of my favorite people. He knew how to work. Did you ever see anybody that knew how to work? He really knew, and I used to watch him. And he worked so methodically, and he had a great sense of humor. So, this one day, we had to hay the fields, and we had one truck and a hay wagon. And of course, Harold Jones, he knew how to stack the hay. You know that there's an art stacking hay on a wagon. But you have to put the wagon out so you make it square. And you have to lay each pitchfork all the way around and make it look nice and square. And mine, I was throwing the hay up any old way, and Bill Reed says, hey, that looks like a woodchuck with a blanket over it. So anyway, and all those things I remembered. Then we had the ice house. Well, the Skulls couldn't afford to have electric ice boxes. I used to think to myself, well, it was apparently fashionable to have your own ice house. So in the wintertime, we'd cut ice down at the lake and bring it up and store it in the ice house. And I like that kind of work. Unfortunately, there's nobody that does that anymore.
Yeah.
But then we'd have to bring the ice up and put it in the ice boxes. Well, Bill Reed and I got that job.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of servants in the house, and they had this English butler in his dressed up in an outfit. And he used to, one time I went up there and he made me a martini. Well, I never had one before. When I came in, I thought my mother saw it right away. I never forget that.
These Skulls, am I correct, had two big houses?
Yeah, two big.
This a joint apartment?
Well, it was kind of a joint, but Robert Skull had died, so they didn't live up there. Nobody lived in that house very much, did they, Paul?
For a long time, no, but
the Herbert Skull house, they were there all the time, and because they had children, and she was an artist, and and they were up there quite a bit. We used to have to fill the dirt cellar. There was a dirt cellar under the greenhouse. But we put truckloads of carrots, you know. Who the hell ate all those carrots? I used to wonder about that.
Carrots and
you
cabbages.
Said that was a dirt cellar?
A dirt cellar, yes. Carrots and cabbages.
They raised all that stuff because that's what they were accustomed to doing.
Yeah.
Of course, we never had to buy any vegetables, but in the spring we had to take all the carrots to the dump. Cabbages and carrots.
Oh.
Did you work in the greenhouse at all, Peter?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of fun there. Big Joe Pellizzari. He was Italian. We used to, you know, we were cruel to him when I think of it now. But we always made fun of him.
Big Joe.
Big Joe. So One time we planted a lot of weeds in the flats, certain kind of weeds. He didn't discover them until they grew up and find out that we planted these flats full of weeds. Boy, he was so mad at us.
Yeah.
He was a nice guy, though. He was. He used to come in, and he was big, 6 foot tall, and he had a real Italian accent. And he was used to come up here a lot, and he used to make green. He used to make train grapes for us. He made a big arbor where he had. He did that for us. You know, he used to do things for us.
Mm-hmm. He was 6 foot or five, by the way, Peter.
He was good-hearted. Man was sort of not much education, so he had left Italy to get out of serving Mussolini's forces. That's what happened when a lot of people came over to beat the draft. Mm-hmm. And I found out his son came over, John. And John was a wonderful clarinetist, and he and I were fast friends. And that's where I got interested in good music, because he was a good musician.
Mm.
And I used to play the violin, we used to play duets together, and we were lived up on top of Smith Hill. And Joe also was a musician. He played the what's the name of that?
A horn of some kind.
It was a big horn, yes. A big crooked horn.
Yes.
He gave it to me. It used to be in there, it was all beat up.
Tuba, perhaps, I'm not sure.
No, it wasn't a tuba, it doesn't make a difference. Except that one of the keys wouldn't work, so.
Can you think of anything else you'd like to ask Peter at this time?
Right now, I don't. After the Depression came, your mother discontinued having...
No, that's guess? Why she had to have people.
Oh,
we
she
had
did.
To make a living.
Oh.
She's the one that made... We were desperate. We couldn't... You couldn't get a job, and they were jumping out of the windows in New York City about things. You couldn't get a job.
But people came here.
And she continued started, to have a boarding house.
Yeah,
here.
And she got these people. She had a break. There was a fellow called Mr. Manning. He was very effeminate. He worked in a very fancy jewelry house in New York City. So he knew all the big screen actors. He knew all the people that... I forget, it was on Fifth Avenue, it was one of these had a little show in it and have a big sapphire in there, you know, that was all it had. It was and he was a very interesting person. I think he was a little bit, you know. Anyway, he would send these people up here.
And they came back year after year.
They came back year after year.
Uh-huh.
One of them was a fella. There was a stand-in for the Prince of Wales. The Prince of Wales was a party kind of a person. He didn't want to go to these functions, so he hired this fella. He dressed like him, he looked just like him. He'd hire him to perform the functions, like visiting an old folks' home in London, or all these kind of things. And this guy would come up here with his wife. Well, he was an alcoholic of the worst kind. He used to drink Scotch whiskey. I never forget it. And the first time he came up, he landed at the Whitbeck's drugstore. That was a social place in town most days. And he wanted to know. He says, "Where does Peter Wick live?" And Charlie Aspen overheard him. "Oh," he says, "I know where Peter Wick lives." He says, "I'll take you up there." So he brought it. He says, "It'll cost you $5. So Charlie drove up with him behind, and then when he got out, he said, "Here's your $5 back." He just wanted to see what kind of a guy he was. Charlie Aspen gave him the $5 back. Can I say
that?
He was a character. Remember the time we run the hotel? This is a good story.
I'll tell you when we're.
But anyway, they had a big. Remember when Roosevelt had all these parties for. In January, for the big dances, it was a Roosevelt party for Marsha Dimes, is now.
Oh, yes.
We used to have these dances.
Yeah.
They were raised money for. One time it was a real cold night. And we were at this dance. Don Warner was here. All the big shots in town were there. And Charlie Astor was sitting in, up there. And he'd pick up somebody's overcoat. Then he walked out downstairs, put it in the tombstones out in the back. And when everybody went to get home, there wasn't any, and all the coats were gone. And it was, snow was piled high, and all their overcoats were in the tombstones out in the back, Charlie. And so anyway, everybody was out in there, floundering around in the snow to try to find the dead. They just picked anything, you know. Dad got a hold of Don Warner's coat. He came home with it, and he said, well, this is a better coat than mine, for God's sakes, you know. So he called up Don Warner and said, I got your overcoat. But wasn't he a great guy,
yeah,
Charlie?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Ashman, A-S-H-M-A-N?
Yeah, Ashman.
Yeah. Charlie Ashman. Mm-hmm. Peter put that on.
Were there any stores up here in Taconic at that time?
Well, it was O'Neill's. He had a dance hall there.
Uh-huh.
He used to have dances. I couldn't sleep at night. They were square dances.
Oh.
And that was something else. Mm-hmm. But that was the only activity we had. And then, of course, the Scandinavian dances. But we had good times.
Mm-hmm.
We always, in the winter was a great time for us.
Mm-hmm. How are we doing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, we have time.
Then. We have time.
I'm sorry.
This has been great. I've enjoyed this so much, and I'm sure Marion Haverly has too. I think perhaps we're getting near the end of the tape, Peter, and I can't think of any more fitting way to close than your opening number.
I'll play a song that I learned when my mother was washing dishes.
Do that, but finish with memories, okay?
Very much.
Beautiful.
That was delightful.
That was poor.